Stay tuned after the show for a message from Chevron.
For years, energy industry gurus have seen the downfall of coal, the energy source that powered much of America's industrialization, and warned that a revolution was in the air.
A city we visited in Texas says that on most days its electricity comes 100% from wind power.
Like, literally in the air.
How many miles of wind turbines are we walking through here?
From the furthest point out on the project to the furthest point out back there is right about 13 miles.
The energy sector is embracing the rise of wind power and its massive, massive turbines as a way to keep jobs in communities where coal once thrived.
Best office in the world.
He used to work on oil rigs.
To me, this is more stable.
Oh, it's beautiful.
With oil, it's either a hit or miss.
Fun fact, did you know the average wind turbine in the U.S. is 100 feet taller than the Statue of Liberty? Can you picture that? Hundreds and hundreds of Statues of Liberty sitting closely together with their arms slowly spinning. And spinning. And spinning. And that's exactly what people in states like Nebraska and Iowa could be about to see in their backyards in the near future. Even in Carbon County, Wyoming, which ironically is about to become the home for the biggest wind farm on American soil.
We also have places like Frackville, Pennsylvania, where, in coal country and gas country, where they're looking also to do wind and solar. So it really is in these places that are old school energy hubs.
So today on Politico Energy, we're looking at the growth of American wind energy, both in America's reddest communities and offshore. It's Wednesday, March 10th. So you guys looked at a really interesting topic in this week's episode of The Long Game. And I guess I wanted to start broadly by just asking, what drew you to this topic of the increasingly vibrant wind economy in very red areas?
It's been rare for people to pinpoint where that might actually occur.
This is Politico's Global Translations author, Ryan Heath. And he, along with our sustainability editor, Lorraine Wallert, looked at how wind power is growing in some of the most Republican areas of the country.
And I just thought it was super interesting that while the driver of the wind and the solar and renewable energy industry and the push at a legislative level often comes from the coasts and comes from Democrats, actually, the real economic direct benefit is going to be felt in the middle of the country. And that just brings out a really interesting political tension, because for Republican-held areas to obtain the economic benefits, to deliver the practical dividends to their own people, they might have to team up with Democrats or deliver Democrats some wins politically.
You also spoke with the mayor of Houston, and how does he view this question? He's a Democrat, but obviously very involved in an energy-heavy city. What did he tell you guys?
Well, Houston has the most to win, but also the most to lose if it doesn't get this energy transition right. So I think that the mayor of Houston sees the writing on the wall, that even the biggest fossil fuel companies based in Houston, and there's really a dozen of them that are on the Fortune 500, their combined value is less than Zoom, the video conferencing company at the moment. So, you know, as big as this industry is in Houston, it's obviously something that risks being in severe decline if Houston doesn't transfer those skills that it has. And so that's obviously the sort of playbook that local leaders are trying to tap into, to not try and reinvent the wheel too much, but also not be left behind, because the market fundamentals are fairly clear at this point. Renewables are going to keep going up, and fossil fuels, they might not be disappearing, but they're certainly not going to go through another fracking type explosion like they have done in recent years.
So then here comes the next challenge, right? As Ryan has sort of alluded to, it's the market has made its decision. Here's what's going to happen. But now politics has to catch up to this. And right now, Texas is a really good example, Houston in particular. Renewables have become a political wedge issue in these parts of the country. So what has to happen next is the sort of like the political reluctance to go along with this, even though, corporate America and the markets have already decided where this is headed.
Do we have a sense for how local officials are, you know, if they're retaining the, you know, the cultural resonance of fossil fuels, maybe. But how are they talking about these renewable energy projects in their areas? Are they embracing the, you know, the lingo of environmentalists, or how are they discussing it?
You know, in my experience, they're not rejecting fossil fuels. They're just being very practical about the economic side of the benefits of renewables. There is a group that pushes something called the Western Way, and that's a very clear attempt to engage the more conservative entrepreneurial and political communities around renewable energy. So they're certainly not just adopting the Sierra Club's rhetoric, let's put it that way.
Governor Abbott in Texas, it was before the freeze happened, but he was speaking to a bunch of business leaders in Texas, and he said, you know, we're importing all of these jobs and these high-tech jobs from California, but we're not going to import the blue parts of them. We're going to keep Texas red, despite the fact that we're importing these sort of blue high-tech companies from states, high-tax states like California. So the other thing to remember is in these fossil fuel, rich communities, the top line big oil companies, big gas companies like Exxon, right? Like, they understand what's happening here. But what the local politicians have to struggle with now is all of the infrastructure and the culture down at their level that feeds the bigger companies like Exxon.
While red states keep on struggling to thread the needle between promoting a growing wind energy industry without beating the drum of climate change policy, there's a part of the country where the energy industry is about to set sail. All along the Atlantic coast, states and companies are eagerly waiting to harness the power of offshore wind.
The offshore wind industry in the U.S. is really in its infancy. It really pales in comparison when you're comparing it to the build-out that we've seen in Europe. And it pales in comparison to the onshore wind industry in the U.S., which, you know, has continued to shatter records even amid the pandemic. And so when President Biden entered the White House, he signed an executive order that called for the Interior Department to increase its renewable energy production on public lands and waters. And it also called for doubling offshore wind by the year 2030, which what we're finding with this announcement this week, it's really not that hard to do.
That's Kelsey Tamburino, Politico's renewable energy reporter. And the reason why doubling offshore wind production is now sort of likely is because of this one huge project that's been just waiting to happen, the Vineyard Wind Energy Farm.
The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management on Monday announced that it had completed its environmental review for Vineyard Wind, which is a proposed wind farm that would be off the coast of Massachusetts, south of Martha's Vineyard.
Well, the wind farm is supposed to be up and running sometime in 2023, and that means sometime in 2022, things will kick off here in New Bedford. And when that day comes, things will look a lot busier over here.
If it's approved, it would be the first commercial scale offshore wind project in the U.S. So it's a big step for the Biden administration. Interior Department officials on Monday called it like a big part of their agenda to fight climate change and create good paying jobs, which has been a repeated line for the administration.
The project has had its share of struggles getting permits from the federal government, especially under the Trump administration. But now that it could get final approval as soon as this spring, it could mark the beginning of the offshore wind boom in America.
Waiting in the wings are there are several other commitments across the East Coast for plans to buy tens of thousands of megawatts of other offshore electricity in the years ahead. So many of those states have set climate targets, and that in order to build out those targets, to reach those targets, offshore wind is really going to play a crucial role.
So it sounds like this could really be quite a game changer for the offshore wind industry.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is definitely going to be an area that you'll see the Biden administration focus on. I was actually just listening to a podcast with Jigar Shah, who was just tapped as the head of the loan programs office at the Energy Department. And he was like asked about what energy, clean energy technologies or projects he thinks are going to be considered under this restart of that program. And he said, like, the obvious area is offshore wind because, you know, it's been awarded by so many states, but not really constructed. So there's a lot of support that the administration can provide there.
For more news on energy and the environment, subscribe to our newsletter at politico.com/morningenergy. If you want to support our show, the best way to do it is by leaving us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. I'm Anthony Adragna. Talk to you again tomorrow.
Last year, Chevron invested billions of dollars to bring affordable, reliable, ever cleaner energy to America. Because it's only human to work toward a brighter future. Learn more at chevron.com.